edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Have we got a great guest lined up for you. Before we get to our guest, you know, let me ask you a question. Are you a pastor out there? Are you a minister? Are you somebody who takes care of events that maybe you're looking for a speaker? Maybe you're listening to this, you're a talk show host. Who knows? You're looking for that special someone for your next conference, your next dinner banquet, church event. Who knows what it might be? Folks, check out Acaso Media for speakers like our guest coming up right now. How about, you remember Abe Bolden, the JFK Secret Service agent, Charlie Brandt, the man who cracked the Jimmy Hoffa murder case, and others, so many others. See Acaso Media. It's right there on, in fact, if you're watching this live, you can see that the frame, and boy, a lot of good looking people there represented by Acaso Media.
Yeah, they bring us a number of great guests. And
contact Bill McIntosh. He's a stand up guy. It does a lot for a lot of people. 305-396-2806. The number for, to arrange that. 305-396-2806. Also want to mention, remind everyone again, register for Awaken to the Shaken Conference, May 5 and 6. Registration is free. Gurnee, Illinois. We're going to be talking there. It's going to be so important, so very important. If you can make it, please do. Please do. I guarantee you a memorable time. Pastor Paul Begley, Russ Dizdar, man, are they ever. And they're great speakers. John Robertson, our program director, is going to be there as well. And I just want to say also thank you so much to my wife and my daughter for that nice gift earlier in the program today. Texas Ready as well. Texas Ready Seed Banks, ready to sigh in the world for good reason, folks. They've got regionally appropriate, open-pollinated heirloom seeds. Most seed banks don't take into account geographical differences. They do. They've got hybrids, or they've got certified seeds. Some seeds are only good for one garden. They don't reproduce true to type. Well, let me tell you something. You've got to purchase stable heirloom seeds, Texas Ready. They've got them. They've got certified seeds. And among the seeds, each seed bank contains 80 plus varieties of vegetables and fruits, including 8 dual purpose herbs for both culinary and medicinal purposes. The larger seed banks come with training manuals which teach you to garden properly. You can't go wrong. These are the official seed banks of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. You're not prepared until you have one of these. That's TexasReady.net, TexasReady.net. And make sure you talk to the seed lady, Lucinda Bailey. She's called the seed lady for good reason. She knows her seeds. Just tell them, anyone there, that you heard it on the Hagmann and the Hagmann Report, TexasReady.net.
Coming up and joining us now is Reverend Robert Bouquet. He's a best-selling author. He spent his life proving the impossible is possible and that miracles are real. Robert is a jet captain, a black belt, a former NASCAR driver, and he is an author of his latest book, Prayer at Full Throttle, which was self-published and has climbed to the top of the charts. Excuse me. Reverend, it's great to have you on this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report.
Well, hey guys, thanks for having me, and hello to all of your listeners.
Well, thanks for coming on. How about you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your book?
Well, I'll tell you what, every time I hear somebody read my resume, I just laugh inside, because when I was a kid, you would have never imagined that my life would turn out looking like this. I will say this right up front. All I ever wanted to do was race cars for a living. And as a kid, I told my parents, God built me to race cars. But nobody ever listens to something like that. So for the rest of my youth and my teen years, really all I was the skinniest kid in school. I was picked last in gym class every day. I was a bone-thin klutz. In fact, I graduated from high school 5'10", 130 pounds. I was literally a walking klutz skeletal structure with not an ounce of self-confidence. I ended up in college. I had no idea why I should be there. But for a long reason I won't get into, I ended up reading the New Testament, which no one I knew had ever read. And that was the pivot point in my life. It was unlike anything I'd ever heard in church. In fact, I found church to be quite boring. I thought it was odd that we're made in the image and nature of God, who is all powerful, and he lives in a city of gold and gemstones, and yet as his son, I was supposed to be weak and live in poverty. That never made sense to me. But when I read the New Testament in college, I found out that I was to be strong, courageous, to speak boldly, to believe in the impossible. It also said to pay attention to your imagination. And while I was reading it, literally, as this, a lot of people can relate to this. If you don't walk with a lot of self-confidence, if you're afraid of what other people think all the time, that's me. That was me. But as I read the New Testament, I saw all these visions for my life. And I believe the first time I ever heard God talk to me was then when he said, "You will prove all things are possible." Because he needed somebody walking around who could actually prove by their own actions that whatever God asks you to do is possible. And so today we can talk about some of those things, but we can rifle through them. I mean, I was running a multimillion-dollar company by the age of 24, all Bible-based. I went on to a terrific sports career. I got into racing, and then we finally, here's the million-dollar deal. That childhood dream of racing cars, which I believed was my purpose, when I finally stepped into that purpose, miracles started happening. We wrote a book about it called Prayer at Full Throttle. It became an Amazon number one bestseller. It has changed my life. It brought me to you tonight, and I'm here to tell everybody listening that dream that is in your heart, the dream that other people laughed at, or they told you couldn't be done, or they said you were too young or too slow or too fat or too slow, all those things people discouraged you from, if you will walk into that calling, God will come right through your hands and your toes, and you'll get your miracle. This book is living proof of that.
Well, from my own personal experience, and many other people who I've talked to will say the same thing. You know, things will happen in your life that you seem, or that may seem as though there's such an inconvenience, or it's a hardship, or, you know, you just could never imagine that, the Lord's going to take you down this road. But every single time, you know, when something like that happens, it's done for a purpose where, you know, one door closes and 10 more open up. And, that's part of our faith journey, part of our trusting in the Lord. And it doesn't come naturally. You know, we got to, it takes a little while, but once you learn how to know that your ways aren't the ways and that the Lord's way are, things do seem to fall into place. So how did you become, you wanted to be a race car driver, and this propelled you into the, place that you are now?
Well, it was interesting when I read the New Testament, it all laid itself out, and my college roommate, who's still in my life today, has watched all of this. There was a progression. The first thing I was supposed to do was get my black belt, which made absolutely no sense. If you would have seen me in a swimsuit back then, me and a black belt do not fit in the same sentence. But I was very obedient, and I knew I was supposed to do that. And so I began karate, and believe it or not, people told me that I was too thin, I was too fragile. Can you imagine as a guy being told you're too fragile? And that I'd get punched once and quit. But the fact is, I had to get over my physical insecurities. I didn't know that was the reason at the time, but that was why he put me on that journey. And I would become a black belt in Shotokan karate. I became regional champion, which blew people away. But God works through people. He'll work through you if you give him that chance. But that was the first step. And while I was actually still training for my black belt, I ended up out of college, working in my first job, which was in the television career, or in the television industry. And in the Bible, I read that I was supposed to throw myself into my tasks so that other people could notice my improvement and progress. And so I did that. I threw myself into my tasks. And at the age of 24, I was running Minnesota's largest cable television company, I was the youngest manager running the biggest, most profitable cable system, and that really launched my business career. But while I was working in television, I was also paying for my flight career because I also knew that I was supposed to be a jet captain. And the reason was I'd missed my window to race for a living, and I still had that drive to you know, just operate high speed, you know, very powerful machines, and so I could see myself as a jet captain. And so I began working to fly myself into a career doing that. And you know what? Here's another shout out to your listeners. Everybody said it couldn't be done, that if I didn't go into the military, that it would be too expensive, it would take too long, by the time I finished, I'd be too old, nobody would hire me, and I would certainly never get into jets. But you know what? I've been a jet captain for 18 years now. Can you believe it? So if we're going to listen to all that stuff the world says can't be done, you might as well fold up your tent and give up now. But God's ways are higher than the world's ways. But this is what was supposed to happen. When I had finished accomplishing all these things, which I did so God would have testimony, I was to build, you're going to laugh about this, I was to build a bright red race car and get out and start racing. And while I was doing that, write a book that would teach what I had learned. And I had no idea, really, that the book would end up being called Prayer at Full Throttle. I didn't really plan all that. It just came crashing down. But you know what? Right now, to this day, I have a bright red race car. It has a book cover on the hood. Everything that I saw when I read the New Testament has now become true. And so I can stand, or sit in this case, I can sit before you and I can speak into the hearts of all your listeners to tell you that what the world calls impossible isn't impossible at all. If you'll just trust God, give him your hands and feet, and walk into those pictures he's showing you, you'll be amazed at what'll happen.
Amen. So you conquered land and you conquered air. Are you going to be going for a speedboating championship then?
No. I don't know. That would be great. But I think, you know, really the call on my life right now is to do exactly what I'm doing, and that is to serve as a living testimony that we all have a calling on our life, and it can be grand and spectacular, and if we'll, you know, that's okay. You don't have to be intimidated by that. If God gave it to you, it will be grand and spectacular. And that you don't have to let people discourage you. In fact, it's so interesting to me. The Bible tells us to be strong and courageous. And so when you look at the word courage, you can then analyze the people that you're spending your time around, because there's only two kinds of people. There are people who will encourage you. You know, they will build your courage. They will magnify your courage. They'll embolden your courage. They'll make you better. But there's another kind of person. Those are the people who will discourage you. They will delete your courage. They'll remove your courage, and they will pave your way to failure. And you know what? That's what happens to most people. This is a long answer. I apologize. But in 2012, there was a study done of hospice patients called the Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. You can Google it. Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. The number one regret of a hospice patient is that they wish they would have had the courage, there's that word, they wish they would have had the courage to live a life true to themselves as opposed to the life someone else had expected of them. And we just rang the bell of about 98% of your listeners right now. My point is, you do not have to give up that life that you know is in your heart. Just stop listening to the discouragement and just walk into those pictures and give God a chance to do his miracles.
Absolutely. One of the areas that I know that we were going to get into tonight is the Johnson Amendment.
Absolutely.
Now, forgive my ignorance.
501c3.
I had to find that out. 501c3 tax status on religious organizations. It's an exemption.
Right.
So tell us about the Johnson Amendment and how...
this is one of my favorite topics, by the way. I love this topic. I can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
Well, I tell you, first of all, most people have never heard of this. Most pastors, and I have proof of this, we don't have time to go into the statistics. Most pastors have no clue what we're about to talk about, and it's just so sad. Here's what happened. I have been out speaking in schools and businesses and retirement organizations for a number of years now, just as a mainstream motivational, inspirational speaker, okay? So then we end up writing a book called Prayer at Full Throttle. Hits number one, and suddenly I'm in the world of ministry. And people ask me, they said, well, now that you're working in the ministry, which we've rebranded, by the way, robertbakke.com is now Robert Bakke Ministries. But people asked me, they said, are you going to go nonprofit and get a 501c3 tax exemption? And I hadn't really thought about it, but what caught my attention is the reason people asked was that if I got the 501c3 tax exemption, that I would no longer be able to speak from a political platform. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, if you're a 501c3, you can no longer voice your political opinion. And I said, well, that can't possibly be right. I have a First Amendment right to free speech. They can't do that. Who says I can't do that? And I was told the IRS says if you're a 501c3, you cannot support political candidates. So I asked why that is. Nobody knew. So I did the research. This is going to blow your listeners away. Back in 1954, I promise this is the truth. Back in 1954, Senator Lyndon Johnson, from Texas, by the way, was competing for his Senate seat against a fellow Texan named Dudley Doherty. Dudley Doherty was giving Johnson a run for his money, and he was funded, Dudley Doherty was, funded by a nonprofit organization. So Lyndon Johnson used his political position. He was also House Minority Leader at the time. Lyndon Johnson proposed a change, an amendment actually, in the tax code that would prohibit nonprofit organizations from financially supporting political candidates. And he slid it right through. It was never debated. He slid it through, and it became law. And it not only became law against nonprofits, when the law passed, it said that nonprofits, churches, and pastors can no longer support verbally or financially a political candidate, and they cannot verbally or financially support or oppose any current or proposed legislation either. Now, what's really interesting about that is there were no churches or pastors even involved in the Doherty campaign, but when the law became the law, it had waterfalled to encompass everyone. And so because of the Lyndon Johnson Senate fight from 63 years ago, to this day, a church has lost its influence on the political process.
That's exactly right. And it's a colorful history, indeed. Interesting history, indeed. Wow. All right. It stuns me every time I hear that, because many people, most people, I would venture to say, don't know the history behind that. And, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can you imagine if that amendment would have said women can no longer voice their political opinions, or blacks can no longer voice their political opinions, or plumbers. If you're a plumber, you can no longer voice your political opinions. That ridiculous law is so restrictive that any legislation that's proposed right now, it could be about abortion, it could be about anything, prayer in school, whatever it is, the church, the very Christian founding of this nation itself, our three founding documents, by the way, are 60% right out of the Bible. The founding fathers employed 9 additional preachers to help them get the Bible scripture correct in our founding documents. All of that biblical influence, all of it, has been removed from Washington, D.C. So even when we have a situation like taking prayer out of school or whatever it might be, pastors sit back and do nothing for fear of losing their tax exemption, and it has to be changed.
Indeed, it does. And I'm not, I don't know how that, boy, you'd have to change the entire tax code. A lot of people will lose. Of course, the other side of that, the Johnson Amendment, is the tax deductible status for, and I know you mentioned, or at least approached this, for people giving the contributions to the churches. But
right.
So what? I mean.
Well, I think that's what the pastors ultimately are afraid of. In fact, this is, thank you for bringing that up, because I didn't cover it. But the reason the tax exemption is so important to the pastors, and the reason they fear losing it, is that if you're a churchgoer and you give offerings or tithes and offerings to your church, you take that as a tax deduction at the end of the year. If your church loses its 501c3 tax exempt status, then you, the churchgoer, when you give offerings, you lose your write-off. And so the pastors are afraid that you'll find another church where you can go ahead and take that write-off, and that's ultimately what they're so afraid of.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Wow. Just, it's just mind-boggling to me, the level of, well, it's always about money at some point, you know? Isn't it? It's money, sex, or drugs.
Maybe rock and roll.
Yeah, there we go.
You gotta throw rock and roll in there too.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
And see, I can see that the church is not wanting to lose their status, but as far as the congregation goes, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around. If you're donating money to a church, why would you worry if you could write it off?
You believe me, so many people are always at the 14th, you know, day before tax day. What can I deduct?
Right.
Yeah. So right. We're next. Go ahead. Where do you want to go next, topic wise?
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh my gosh. Well, we've got a whole list of questions.
Yep, we do.
You know, regarding the book, what it does for people, why people don't pursue their dreams. You tell me what you're interested in.
Well, we got about 3 minutes before we have to take a break. Okay. Tell us something about the book. Here we can accomplish in 3 minutes without bumping against the bottom of the hour break.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. This is another crazy statistic. Only about 6% of people, 6% of Christians have actually read the New Testament. And that really kind of shocks people, but the reality of it is only about 6% of people have actually read the book. And the reason they don't read it is it's very intimidating. If you look at the King James Version, you get about 2 pages into it and you just put it down because it's so difficult to read. I think that the number one compliment we've gotten off of Prayer at Full Throttle is, aside from the fact it's a very quick read and it's a very simple read, but it simplifies the Bible in ways that people finally get a chance to see what's actually in the Bible. And it's everything we talked about is backed up by chapter and verse. And it's all written to the way that we live today. So the current events that you're running into, I attach Bible scriptures to it. And so what happens is people read Prayer at Full Throttle and it's very empowering. And it tends to take away that intimidation people have for reading the New Testament. So it's kind of like a stepping stone into the big book, which I really believe everybody needs to read. It's a very powerful book, and the things that are in there really, really shock people, and hopefully reading Prayer at Full Throttle will get them in there.
And you have this here, and we have just enough time, I think, before the break to cover this. You talk about your book titled Prayer at Full Throttle. In your book, you talk about performance-based prayer. Can you explain that,
Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. Performance-based prayer is really prayer followed by a corresponding action. In other words, you know, don't ignore God 365 days a year, and then when you're in trouble, throw a prayer at him and then just sit there and do nothing and expect magic fairy dust to fall out of the ceiling. It's amazing. The entitlement mentality is alive and well in America. And it's alive and well in the Christian community, too. I mean, they expect miracles to fall out of the sky, what I call magic fairy dust faith. And so we explain to people how praying and then rising up out of your chair and getting to work towards what you're asking for will, in fact, help it manifest. And we can give you examples of that when we get back. How much time until the break?
Well, we'll take it right now because I'm just amazed. You know, you mentioned earlier about regrets, you know, deathbed regrets or end-of-life regrets. You're a jet captain, aerobatic flight instructor, black belt karate instructor, regional champion, best-selling author, race car driver, ski instructor. You ready? I'm getting tired, okay, and was running a multi-million-dollar company by the age of 24, okay? This is who we're talking to, and after shattering numerous sales records, our guest eventually said goodbye to his business career, moved on to be captain jet aircraft. I mean, yeah, just what the heck? I can fly this. Here, hold my beer. Watch this. Right? No, we're talking about a man and the author, of course. Prayer at Full Throttle. I'm losing my voice. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to our guest tonight, Robert. I don't want to slaughter your last name.
It's Bakke.
Bakke.
B-A-K-K-E.
That's right.
Reverend Robert Bakke. That's Reverend Robert Bakke. RobertBakke.com. B-A-K-K-E.
The Racing Rev.
There you go.
We'll be right back with Reverend Bakke right after this. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is, it'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric's
it's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Armies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic armies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Armies kit at www.trainclosenwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
fire at full throttle. How many of you and I mean, how many of us, how many among us want our prayers to be at full throttle? We all do, right? And I can't think of a better title for a better book. Prayer Full Throttle, How Performance-Based Prayers Make Miracles Happen. Our guest is the author, Robert Bakke. Excuse me. Again, here I go. But what a great title. I was saying that during the break, and I really believe, folks, our guest, the author of Prayer Full Throttle, and by the way, go to Amazon.com, grab this book. It's in Kindle hardcover and paperback. I just love the physical copies. I don't think there's a better book out there for prayer in terms of, well, performance-based prayers. Make miracles happen. Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you. Let's bring Robert back on. And I'm impressed by this work. I really am.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just talking about the performance-based prayer before the break. And if we can, let's get a little bit more into your book, Prayer at Full Throttle. How can it help transform Christian activists into confronting a corrupt culture?
Well, the first things Christians have to do, or the first things Christian need in their toolbox, is they really need the Word of God. They need to understand what the book actually says. And it's a constant frustration for me that there's a huge population in the United States that believes in God. Faith is not the issue. 92%, regardless of what the media tells you, Gallup can prove it, 92% of America believes in God. But only about 17% actually go to church, and most of them haven't really read the book either. And so what Prayer at Full Throttle can do is it will bring the Bible to life for people. It will, in a very simplistic and easy manner, show you what's not only in the Bible, but how it relates to you personally. It'll empower you in the ways that you need to be empowered, and it will also show you then what's wrong with society, the different moral issues, the lack of America as a nation to be able to dream anymore. You know, the last 8 years, we've really gone through an American beatdown. I mean, when you look at class warfare, which is really a joke when you think about it. In fact, if anybody's upset about wealthy people and you think that you've been victimized by a wealthy person, ask yourself this. If you received a letter tomorrow from a law office and it said that you've just received $25 million for doing nothing, would you take the inheritance? Of course you would. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inherently wrong with money. In fact, all the way through the Bible, God's chosen people were the wealthiest people on the planet. And that surprises people because the religious talk has always been that we should be living in poverty. But that's why Jesus warned us over and over again to beware of the teachers of religion. He said, hey, this is all about me now. Just listen to what I have to say. You know, so for people to be empowered and to go out and to change their neighborhoods, to change their communities, to rise up into positions of political office and carry biblical principles with them, which are the principles that made America the most prosperous nation in the history of the planet. For us to be able to do that, we have to know what was in that book first. And so what Prayer at Full Throttle does is it begins that growth process for everybody.
Very interesting. I want to kind of go down an avenue here. You know, you have succeeded and excelled in much of what you've done in your life, whether, you know, that be a race car driver, learning to fly, becoming an author. And you talk about how important it is for somebody to step into their calling.
And absolutely.
It seems like you've had a number of callings.
I did.
Now, I think that pertains, you know, we all have our, all of us who are born again and who believe in God have a spiritual calling. And that seems to be separate, or at least somewhat separate from our professional callings, and sometimes they can be one and the same.
Correct.
Were you getting into and succeeding in some of the things you had done for your occupation, your jobs, and in your life Did that transfer over to succeeding more in your spiritual life, or was it the other way around?
Well, it clearly started at my. It was spiritual first. It was the Word of God that told me, that showed me what I was supposed to do with my life. And to actually go do it is called obedience, and I wish more people would be obedient. But to be 100% clear, I had no self-confidence at all before I read the New Testament. I had no clue why I was in college. I just had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And I was literally the skinniest kid in my school. I was that kid who was picked last in gym class every single day. For that kid to believe God was saying, I need you to prove all things are possible. I mean, that's the craziest thing anybody's ever heard. But I began that life's journey because of the spiritual awakening first. So whatever my life looks like today, guys, it comes from God Himself, and it came from reading the Word, which fed my spirit and then manifested out my hands. In fact, let me give you a great example of how God works through people. I'm sure you've all heard the story of David and Goliath, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is another great religious misteaching, because it was so important and we missed it. David did not kill Goliath. If you read the story, it's really interesting. When this 9-foot-tall Philistine was terrorizing everybody and everybody was running in other directions, the youngest of 8 boys, little David, looks at a man named Saul and he says, hey, don't worry about this. I'll take out the Philistine. Saul laughed at him. And he said, don't be ridiculous. You're just a little kid, man. He's going to feed you through a meat grinder. You know, that's my paraphrased edition. But David said, no, he won't. When you read the story, David said this. He said, the Lord delivered me from a lion, and the Lord delivered me from the bear, and the Lord will deliver me from this Philistine. Now, that's really interesting that he was so humble that he actually knew where his power came from. So then he goes out to stare down Goliath, and Goliath literally looks at him and says, you goofy little kid, I'm going to feed you to the birds. And David said, no, on this day, the Lord will strike you down. And then you know what he did? He ran. He ran at that great big beast that scared everybody in the other direction. And as he ran, think about this in terms of performance-based prayer. He ran, he loaded a slingshot, started twirling that stone over his head, and he fired the rock. And that's what took out Goliath. It was David being humble enough to know where his power came from. He knew that the power of God came through him, and he ran. He actually put action into his faith. The book of James says that faith without works is dead. It says just like a human body without a breath is dead, so is faith without works. David displayed spectacular faith when he actually charged Goliath, and God came right down through his hands. But you know what we do as humans? Let me tell you what we do as humans. Einstein had it right. Einstein said that everybody is a genius. But if we judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, the fish will spend its entire life believing it's stupid. And you know what happens? We're so afraid of what other people think that when we voice a great big goal, just like David said, I'll take out the Philistine, and got laughed at, when we get laughed at, we quit. And just like those hospice workers who said they wish they would have had the courage to live a life true to themselves, no. What happens is we become that fish that's trying to climb a tree, and we struggle through our lives needlessly because we didn't have the courage to do what David did, and that is rise to the call and let God work through us.
And that's very well said. You know, you talk about the courage.
But obedience, too. I just keep getting that in my head, obedience. But go ahead.
Yeah, when you talk about courage, at least what comes to my mind, and I'm sure what comes to a lot of other people's minds, are situation, you're going to have to go above and beyond, maybe even something out of character, stepping out of your comfort zone, even sometimes putting your your physical well-being on the line. But that's not always the case. There's a lot of people that are, as you were just alluding to, there's a lot of people who are paralyzed for fear of discomfort, for fear of, you know, how others will look upon them, for fear of failure. And if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is, even just having the courage to be obedient to the Lord, and then having the courage to do what's right for yourself, to be able to step up and to fulfill your calling in life. And I agree with what you said. So many people don't find their own calling in life because they're afraid to step out and get into that comfort zone. It's not that they don't have the courage. It's just that, you know, we're in this society that is just so corrupt, and the world is so corrupt. And people just seem to be paralyzed through fear, for, you know, one of a million reasons. But I think I know for sure that the faith walk, if you're all right with the Lord and your relationship with the Lord is okay, and you are being obedient, you're walking that out, there is nothing that anybody in this world should be able to say to you, or and how they judge you. It shouldn't matter. And I think that, you know, if we go back to the basics, you know, you lay that foundation, which is your faith, first, and then you can build everything off that. If your foundation is not built on faith, which is, you know, the most solid thing, then it's going to crumble. And, you know, we see that so often, and I've experienced that many times, you know, trying to do things, trying to do things backwards. But a lot of times also, you know, like we have Jesus, his example in the Bible. He gave us the example. Not only did he tell us what we needed, he was the example, and we're supposed to be that example. What kind of inspirational? What motivated you aside from your faith? Were there certain people? Were there certain situations that helped you, you know, to get over certain obstacles in your life?
Well, first of all, people just have to get over fear. I mean, nobody got laughed at more than I did. So I don't care who you are listening right now or watching it via Skype, you didn't get laughed at more than I did. Okay, so listen, if God will work through me, he'll work through you. So that's just a done deal, you know, right there. But what motivated me the most, you know, again, when you read the book, when you read the New Testament, it's going to jump out in different ways at different people. But for me, it was something called the story of the talents. And basically, it's a story about people who are given silver coins to invest. And those who, you know, go to work and they invest and they multiply what they had been given. They're given more and they're celebrated. The word says that those who use well what they have been given shall be given abundance. They'll be put in charge of many things and they'll be celebrated. And so the actual word is well done, good and faithful servant. And so the first trigger words that hit me were in the story of the talents where it says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little, I will put you in charge of much. As you read that story, the third of these three servants in this parable took what he had been given and he buried it in the ground for fear he was going to lose it. For fear he was going to lose it. Call that a fear of failure. So he buried what he had in the ground. Well, in the parable, when the landowner comes back and says, you know, what have you done with what I've given you? He said, I was afraid I would lose it, so I buried it in the ground. Here's what you gave me. And the third of these servants now, who did nothing, they took what little he had and they gave it to the one with the most, which is interesting because that's reverse socialism. You believe that? When they take from the, in fact, it says in the Bible, take from the one with the least what little he has and give it to the one with the most. And then they called that the person who did nothing lazy and wicked. And he's cast into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. And that story, which is in the book of Matthew, the first book of the New Testament, the idea that if we were to multiply and make good use of what we were given, we would be given abundance and we'd be celebrated, that registered with me just as much as the person who did nothing, had what little he had taken away, and he was cast into outer darkness. And I, for some reason, I just didn't want to be the one that was cast away. And so as I continued to read and I saw these visions for my life, I really believed that those were gifts and that I was to put them to use. You know, one of the ways in this entire story, what's happening, how I know these things are happening, is I could see them in my imagination. And it's really interesting. We don't pay enough attention to our imagination, but the New Testament says that's one of the ways God talks to us. In fact, one of the scriptures, this is really interesting, it says, gird up the loins of your mind. Now, in the concordance, the word mind can be switched out with the word imagination, gird up the loins of your imagination. But I still wanted to know what that meant, and so I got this big book called the Strong's Concordance, and I broke that scripture down. And this, everybody who can hear my voice, you need to hear this. What God is telling us in that sentence is, strengthen the procreative power of your imagination. Strengthen the procreative power of your imagination. He's telling you that your imagination is strong and it has you know, procreative power to manifest. There was another scripture that said, don't be conformed to the things of this world, but be renewed by the renewing of your mind. Again, the word mind can switch out with imagination. Renew your imagination. We need to think bigger, and we need to think brighter. We need to think more spectacular things. And those types of thought processes are what catapulted my life.
And that's fascinating stuff. Robert, in today's world, we see the political climate is unlike any other in the history, at least since I can remember, with the division, with the deception in the media and in both political parties. Our government is corrupt inside and out.
It's horrible.
And that reflects on our school systems, and we were just talking about the how the school systems are have removed the Lord, removed prayer, the Bible. They've even taken Christmas and the word Christmas away and made it the winter holiday on and on and on. And you have this adaptation of Islam in public schools. Everything's upside down, especially how it says it should be, or it in the Bible it says this is how it will be eventually. But at the same time, many Christians find it so hard to live in this world. They get discouraged. There's no victories on the battlefronts of Christian fights, whether it be, the abortion fight, same-sex marriage fight, keeping the Lord in schools, keeping the Ten Commandments at the courthouse. It just seems like, we're discouraged left and right. How do you turn that negative energy, or how would you advise people to turn, the constant negative energy, the constant deception, the constant bombardment of satanic influences into positive lessons?
Well, first of all, you just hit the nail on the head. It is so disappointing what we've seen, not only in the last 8 years, which I think was really a beat down of everything that America ever stood for, but in the last several months, we've seen like never before a bias in the mainstream media that went even beyond the media and right into the polling agencies. Have you ever seen more corrupt polling ever in your entire
no,
life?
No.
It was ridiculous, and we could go for hours on that, and it is frustrating. But one of the things we can do is start calling our congressmen and our different representatives and start making noise about the Johnson Amendment so that when we see Christianity being shoved into a corner, like you said, prayer being taken out of the schools, the Bible used to be the primary textbook in our schools. But with the Johnson Amendment, we don't get the fight out of the church that we need because they're afraid. So, you know, we need, first of all, we need to do what is necessary so that pastors have the courage to rise up. But it's not just the pastors. Everybody who is born again, everybody who believes Jesus Christ is their Lord and their Savior, you know, no more of this, your faith is personal to you. Because Jesus gave us a great commission, which is to what? To go into all of the world and make disciples of every nation. We're not supposed to sit quietly in our homes with our faith. That's, quite frankly, that's ridiculous. We are to be strong, courageous, speak boldly, go into the world. We're supposed to be Christian soldiers. And so I'm trying to empower people to rise up with their faith. And I'll tell you something else. Just to give you an idea of how so many, sadly, organized religion church services have bent the word. Did you know that the original Greek definition of the word religion is defined as the bondage of men.
Mm-hmm.
Bondage of men. So when Jesus is warning us about religion, we need to understand he's trying to break us free from the bondage, which is, you know, weakness and living in poverty and, you know, all that stuff that at least I grew up listening to. Part of that was we were told, I brought this for you guys, so you're going to have to let me read this sheet of paper for you. I made this for you.
Okay.
I brought it along with me tonight.
Sure.
We were told that we were supposed to be fruitful and multiply, that was God's first command. We heard it in church all the time. Be fruitful and multiply. And they wanted us to have big families. That's what that meant, right? Big families, which is good for the church business. Well, that same first commandment goes on to use words like subdue and take dominion, which means dominate. And so I started thinking, what does subduing and dominating have to do with having big families? So once again, I pulled out my big, thick Strong's Concordance, which taught me about the imaginations and everything else that we just talked about. And I broke down the first commandment in its context. You know, in other words, what does it really mean? What do those words mean in context? God's first command to us was not necessarily to have big families. This is right out of the concordance. These are the words that define who we should be. If you believe in God, this is what you're built for. Prosper, to grow, to increase, to enlarge, to excel, to accomplish, overflow, to conquer, and to reign. That is what we need believers to get into their hearts and into their thinking if we are going to make America the great and prosperous nation that it once was.
No, you're absolutely right. Reverend, we have about 5 minutes left before the end of the show. I want to kind of ask you a question out of left field.
Sure.
When you were writing this book, was there one thing that you were surprised that you learned while putting the book together?
Oh, surprised that I learned. Well, what surprised me? Yeah, I know exactly what it was. I used to argue about racing cars for a living. I mean, really, this was a big deal for me. I almost ran away from home because all I wanted to do was race cars. And my parents, bless their hearts, you know, they would say, why would God build anybody to race cars? And this was my really self-centered, I didn't understand response, okay? I said, because parents like to see their children having fun. And so God built me to enjoy racing cars. So when I race cars, it'll bring him enjoyment because I'm having fun. It was all about me, if you didn't pick up on that. It was all about me.
Mm-hmm.
What I never realized was, as I was writing Prayer at Full Throttle, which I did not want to write, by the way, you talked about obedience. When it came on me one night that I was to write this book, and the book, by the way, does provide pictures of bona fide actual miracles that happened around the race car. If you don't think miracles are real, We included pictures to prove it. But while I was writing it, I was, first of all, to write it very simply so that everybody could understand it. This is not an intimidating book. It is extremely simple to read. But I also, just like I saw the pictures for my life in college, as I was writing the book, I knew it was going to succeed. I knew it. I could see myself being on television. I could see it going around the world. And it was interesting to see the pictures in my imagination. And what happened was, and keep in mind, this is all self-published. I sat home alone. I talked to God. I wrote this thing. I did all the promotions myself, financed it myself, which was a real test of faith. People get so clingy about their money, but you want to go big, let go of your money. But what happened was the book became a bestseller in 3 weeks. It had gone all the way around the world on live television, not streaming. It went around on network live television into every region of the world in 4.5 months. It's a multiple number one bestseller on Amazon, and it has touched lives all around the world. And that's really, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I thought my car racing was about me having fun and going fast and turning left and bumping fenders. I thought that's what the car racing was all about, and it was totally wrong. Jesus needs disciples in every arena. If you're an accountant, he needs you as a disciple. If you're a talk show host, he needs you as a disciple. If you're a race car driver, he needs you as a disciple, and he'll work through you to accomplish his purpose. My auto racing went from 2 small local NASCAR tracks in Minneapolis to a book that would touch lives all the way around the world. And that's what I learned, that God has a plan for us that's bigger and more spectacular than we can imagine on our own. And if he'll do it through me, he'll do it through anybody. He'll do it through everybody that can hear my voice right now. So trust in God's plan for your life. Stop listening to the laughter. Rise up in courage. Give him your hands and your feet. And go after your miracle, because it will come true.
Amen. Reverend, one last question. We only have about a minute left.
Sure.
If someone wants to book you for a speaking event or wants a copy of your book, Prayer at Full Throttle, where do they go?
Well, for speaking, go to Ocaso Media. It's Ocaso. Ocaso Media. Ocaso. If you want the books, or I say books because it's in all formats, but you can go to Amazon, Prayer at Full Throttle on Amazon. Or if you'd like a signed copy of the paperback, I love doing this, you can go to Robert Bakke Ministries, B-A-K-K-E. Go to Robert Bakke Ministries, and I sign paperbacks there and personalize them. And
I love it. I'm going to get one of the signed ones. I love the signed copies.
Hopefully we can have you back on.
Love to have you back on.
Anytime, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
God
so
bless
much.
You, sir. Wow. What a powerful segment that was.
Reverend Ray, Robert Bakke is our guest, and want to thank him again for the fantastic interview. Wow. That'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening.